Welcome to Lights, Camera, Baby, brought to you by Mama Magic, the podcast where we shine a spotlight on the realities of parenting and the journey from pregnancy to postpartum. Now, today's episode is all about going beyond the snapback. We're diving into the pressure moms feel to bounce back physically after childbirth and more. How to prioritize nourishment, healing, and self-care during this transformative time. Joining me today is the incredible Natalie Matt, a registered dietitian, mom of two, and a champion for women's health and well-being. Now, Natalie will be sharing her expertise and personal experience to help us unpack the role of nutrition in postpartum recovery, the effects of hormones on our bodies and minds, and how to approach challenges like hair loss, sleep deprivation, and weight loss with compassion. This is a conversation for every mom who's ever felt the pressure to snap back or struggle to prioritize herself amidst the demands of motherhood. Grab a cozy seat and maybe a snack because we're about to redefine what recovery looks like in the postpartum journey. Let's dive right in. So Natalie, thank you so much for joining us today. It is such a pleasure having you here and meeting you. And I'm so excited for our moms to get to know you because I think you're going to be here often because you have so much to share.
Thank you.
So much to share. And I think you're just going to make this parenting journey for all our moms so much easier. So today we're talking about postpartum recovery and weight management, you know, all from a nutrition perspective. So let's start by explaining how postpartum recovery like focuses on, you know, like what is it? Is it a healing? Why do we need, is nutrition so important during this time? I mean, there's so much to unpack there, right? Let's start there.
There really is so much to unpack. And I think if you view the journey of motherhood and becoming a parent, you spend 9 months, so many of my clients are so focused on exercise and hydration and taking care of themselves while they are pregnant. And as soon as the baby comes out, that like pendulum of self-care just goes whoomp all the way to the other side and you're just taking care of a baby. And nutrition during this time is meant to support you in that journey, but you also want to bring it back to the middle so that you can take care of you too. If you don't have adequate nutrition, if you aren't taking care of yourself, you won't be able to take care of your baby as well. Some of our moms will have undergone major abdominal surgery if they've had a C-section, and then there is healing to do. And some of our moms will also have had a traumatic or a birth that really there might have been blood loss. And so you have that element to recover from as well. And people forget about the roller coaster that our hormones go on to.
Of course.
And that will influence every factor of how a mom is feeling, from energy levels, hormones affect mood, metabolism, everything. And so the journey, yes, it's about mom's recovery, but also being able to take care of the little person that you've just met.
Yeah, you're so right. I mean, there's so much focus on baby when baby's born, so much of focus on baby that mom just takes the sidebar, you know, and you are still so integral to baby's development, baby's both physical and mental state as well. And moms forget about that, right? So where should they start? What kind of nutrients do you need for recovery? What kind of, and where do you get all of this from?
We all have this idea of how our postpartum journey is going to look. And the one thing that I see most or many of moms forgetting is to get in protein. Because there's a little bit more chaos, you're grabbing a biscuit or a slice of toast or something like that. If you have not made sure that there is protein, whether it is some leftover chicken, some boiled eggs, some dairy, whether it's yogurt or milk in the fridge, you're just going to carry on grabbing the little bit of this and that as you can. And protein is what helps us feel full. It gives us that feeling of satiety, but it also helps with wound recovery. And if you think, if you're a postpartum breastfeeding mom,
yes,
you are now literally eating for two, because all of the milk that you are making for your growing baby, you have to produce, you have to have those nutrients. And so you need 800 extra milliliters of water a day, and you need at least about 20 grams or a medium-sized chicken breast extra protein a day, your breast milk production is only 80% efficient. And so for every 100 calories that you produce as breast milk, you've spent an additional 20% on top of that just to produce the milk. And so there really is a lot of work that goes into breastfeeding too, and you have to consume those nutrients. If you don't consume them, you are taking some from your storage, but we don't store protein very well.
So generally speaking, when we talk about 800 milliliters more of water for hydration, over and above, what is the general limit? I mean, what is the general, number that we should strive for? I know people would say 1.2 liters or 1.5 liters, but is it different for everybody?
There's an easy rule of thumb. Yeah. We're aiming for about a glass or 250 milliliters of water per 10 kilograms of your adult weight.
Okay.
But there is another easy thing to look at as well, and that is, sorry, I'm going to get gross, but it is the color of your urine.
Okay.
So if your urine is dark, cloudy, or strong smelling, chances are you're not getting in enough water, and you should maybe aim to up that.
Okay. A lot to consider. See, I mean, I think it's such a basic thing, hydration, and often mislooked. It's nobody looks at it in detail, and they think, "Oh, I'm drinking enough water," or I have teas and I have juices. Does that count as well?
Absolutely. So we often say that out of the water you need, you will get a lot of it from your food. Think of even toast and bread will still have a tiny bit of hydration in them. So you do get water from the salads and the fresh produce that you are eating. Juice obviously will contribute. And I know a lot of moms will drink jungle juice because they feel that it helps them with their breast milk production. So there is water in that.
Right.
I would caution moms that jungle juice is pretty high in sugar. So if you're sipping only that, you're increasing the risk of having cavities. You don't necessarily want to wash your teeth in sugar all day. And from a weight perspective, everything has nutrients in it. If you're drinking a lot of juice and eating a lot of fresh produce and snacking the whole day, you're not necessarily going to be in a calorie deficit. That said, you don't want to be in a huge calorie deficit, because if you're not getting enough nutrients in, your breast milk production will suffer.
And if you're choosing the wrong foods, so you might feel obviously as well. I'm just thinking, like you're saying, you balancing, you feeding baby, washing, trying to sort out the house, trying to do so many things, grabbing a quick biscuit, a piece of cake, a muffin is lying there. It's quick stuff, but those are the calorie dense stuff, right? And they might not fill you up though. So much.
I often think that if you can just aim for a balance, is there some protein, some carbs, some fat, some produce? Can you aim for that? Obviously not at every meal, but as you start incorporating those, you're going to find that your blood sugar control is better. And what I mean by blood sugar control is that feeling of comfort, that stable energy levels, not kind of on this roller coaster up and down of your blood sugars going all over and feeling energized and then crashing and energized and then crashing. So when you make sure that all of your meals have a balance of nutrients in them, and to be honest, juice can be part of the carbs of a meal. It's not that, this is forbidden and we mustn't have it. You just want to make sure that there is more than just juice in your meal.
So juice is a carb.
Yes.
Yes, that's very sad.
You just need to know where to put it.
Now, we're talking about snapping back after pregnancy, right? I mean, moms just think about as soon as baby's out, this tummy's going to be in, and I would have lost all this pregnancy weight, or they might put themselves on heavily restricted diets. Now, is that harmful?
Yes, absolutely. A very interesting study that I love says that postpartum women experience the greatest body dissatisfaction 6 months postpartum. So just as your baby is sitting up and starting to eat solids, that's the peak point of why isn't my waist just back here? Like, how is it possible that I have this
baby
and I'm not back there? And when I'm working with clients, I will often say to them, give yourself at least a year before you start to feel yourself again, before you start to feel comfortable again.
Right.
And the truth is, there are a lot of examples on social media of people snapping back quickly because that is kind of endorsed, encouraged, promoted. But all of us who didn't snap back did not post about it. We did not spread it, and we did not talk about it. And so the voices that you're hearing on social media are often creating a dissonance in us very normal parents because they have snapped back faster. And the truth is that if you have snapped back faster, wouldn't you want to kind of go, look at this? But we're all different. Yep. You don't know how their hormones impacted them. You don't know how much weight they gained overall. That's you don't know if their baby is sleeping better than yours is or not. And one of the best things I did to myself postpartum was any social media where the mom was creating a dissonance in me, when I saw it, I unfollowed them for my mental health. I just felt this is not helpful. And I don't, you're back at your weight and you're posting photos of it online. Like, that wasn't helpful for me when I was feeling uncomfortable. And there are so many factors that determine how quickly you get back into shape. And a lot of those we don't control.
Yeah. And we think we do.
We think we do. But the first lesson of parenthood is you control nothing.
But you're happy to go on the journey.
Yes, very much so. Right. And I think also being present in the moment, that the most important thing that you're going to do as a new parent is not make your bum and waist small. The most important thing that you're doing is the work of getting to know this person that you have grown, right? Making sure that you are a responsive parent, that you're available to them. Yes. If you're feeding them, that you're feeding them in the way that is responsive to their needs. Like, your number one job postpartum is not to shrink yourself. Your number one job postpartum is to take care of your new family.
That is true. So what do you do when you know things are not within your control? What can moms do to help them on this journey with regards to nutrition? How do you find the balance? Because it's not just you prepping for your family and you're trying to think, oh, but dad loves pasta, you know, or baby loves this, or my older child loves this, and you put yourself last.
I think a very small amount of planning can be helpful. When I see people online who have planned a whole lot of, like, the whole week and it's in little boxes,
for the week.
That is, I'm like, no, that's too much. My brain just cannot handle that. And I would suggest that we take tiny, tiny, realistic, bite-sized plans. So you might plan for 2 days ahead. And in that, maybe you're not going to make one meal for everyone. You might even say, I'm going to make a plain chicken, and then there's going to be pasta here, and there's going to be peas, and there's going to be whatever else, so that you can almost grab and go little bits and bobs. And that also, when you need the little extra something, whether it's at 3 a.m. or first thing in the morning, if you feel I need a little bit of, it's there and it's prepped for you. So one of the best things that you can do is actually give yourself a little bit of wiggle room, pre-chop your veggies or pre-pack stuff into little meals for you, so that when, if you have time to do it and you're not holding a baby in your arm or something like that, that it is available there for you. And one of the best things that I do for myself even now is, if I have extra time to make more, I freeze leftovers. So if I've made a stew or a curry or whatever I've made, to put it in a glass jar to top it with the starch and just put that either in the fridge or into the freezer, so that when I need a meal, I've got a ready mixed meal. I can still slice a tomato or add a chunk of cucumber, because that's mom life.
Yes. And there's no need to feel bad about it at
all.
No.
And your meal doesn't need to be Instagrammable, right?
Yes.
It doesn't need to be beautifully curated. You just need a mix of nutrients. You need your carbs, your proteins, your fats, ideally some fresh produce, move on.
Yes.
And so I think we put so much pressure on ourselves to have everything perfect, when good enough will do.
Yes, that is so true. I love that. I think we should all do that. I mean, and stop comparing ourselves. I think that is the biggest flaw in this world right now. Too much of comparisons, and I I like your other point about removing yourself, you know, from those toxic people that you follow. If they might not realize what they're doing. Their intentions are different in terms of what they're posting. But if it affects you, if it's creating the subconscious behavior of comparison, then leave it for now.
Absolutely.
It's okay. It's okay. Because there's other changes that are going on now as well, right? It doesn't mean that you, through the pregnancy, that the hormones are not still fluctuating, correct? Mm-hmm.
No, absolutely. So as you give birth, your hormones plummet. And it can be incredibly uncomfortable. Not every woman has the same kind of hormone mix or reaction to their hormones. But as your estrogen and progesterone decrease significantly, you can get postpartum depression. You can experience very uncomfortable moods. And we do know that about 20% of women will experience postpartum depression. It's when the baby blues get more serious, more uncomfortable. And I think it's important that we mention it. The parents who are just nauseous all the time and really have no appetite, or the people who are just eating and eating and eating and eating to cope, that can often be a flag that this person is struggling. And we know about postpartum depression. Yeah. We shouldn't be afraid to talk about it. We should be able to say, hey, friend, are you okay? So it can be very significant as your hormones fluctuate like that, or plummet, I should say.
Yeah.
And then cortisol plays such a huge role postpartum. So one of the main drivers, everyone goes cortisol equals stress.
Yes.
Cortisol also goes up when you don't sleep enough. And I have not met anyone who has a brand new baby who sleeps through the night like a little dream. You are going to be awake. And that decrease in duration of sleep, that decrease in deep sleep, is going to make you hungry. This is normal. This is expected. And we do know that higher cortisol levels can, in some people, really increase the likelihood that they'll gain weight. So you've got this like terrible combo where mom's snacking on biscuits because that's what she can get her hands on, but her cortisol is elevated and it makes her slightly insulin resistant, so she's got that weight gain that can come from that. And so there are some women who gain quite a lot of weight postpartum just because of the impact of not sleeping.
Oh my word.
This idea that if you're breastfeeding, you'll lose weight so quickly.
Yes.
As many moms as I have seen is how many different patterns there are. I have some moms that it was the medication they were taking to support breastfeeding that just kept their weight stable. I've had other moms where as soon as they started sleeping better, their weight finally changed. Other moms whose hormones as long as the hormones are doing a little wobble, that mom's weight feels out of control. And then, of course, if you have a breastfeeding child, you don't have control over that person's appetite, and that will influence your own appetite. And so the sense of control over how much do I need to eat or not can be really overwhelming for some people.
So how can mom fix this? Because now, you know, there's some times when the hormone levels are fabulous and she's on a high and she feels like she can, you know, heal the world. And at some points, it's absolute plummet where she's, you know, at the bottom of the bottom and cannot lift herself up to make a meal. What kind of strategies can moms put in place or support can they have in place to help them through this?
So ask for help. First and foremost, from anyone who is around. People will often say, let me know if I can come visit or this or that. If you are a person who is comfortable asking for help, ask for the food to be prepped for you. Yeah. Phone someone and say, can you please just hold my baby while I make a few dishes, things like that. You still want to aim for small, regular meals. You still want to have balanced meals, because if your mood is doing this, it's possible that your energy levels and your blood sugar levels are also kind of going up and down, not in a way that is pathological, not like, oh, I've got diabetes, but that if you are kind of white knuckling it through the day on very little calories, you're going to feel horrible. That is stressful for your body. And so being able to access small, regular meals will keep your energy levels up, will keep you feeling calm and comfortable so that you are able to take care of your child. It is overwhelming being a new parent, especially for first children. I think that is just like a really scary experience for a lot of us. You don't know what to do. And this little human did not come with a how-to. And so we're like learning happening on the job. It's incredibly stressful. And the small things that we can do, like asking for help, having small regular meals, making sure healthy food is available, those make that journey a tiny bit easier.
That is so true. And mums, sometimes, like we're saying, you know, you think you're capable of doing everything. This is what you, this is your job. This is your task. This is you. And you will do it. But there is a support system. So lean in on that, right? I think it's between a personal support system within your family, within your friends. And then there's an external support system, like, you know, people like yourself, you know, dietitians and nutritionists and professionals that can help you through that as well. Now, let's talk about, okay, we're going through all this hormone fluctuation. It's affecting our mental health. What kind of foods, nutrient-rich foods, can we focus on? You know, is there anything that we should lean on more than something else during that time? I mean, I know protein should always form that base, but is there anything over and above that?
I'm a firm believer in the Mediterranean dietary pattern. Okay. It has really some wonderful data basically suggesting that we should eat an abundance of fresh produce. We should use dairy and legumes regularly. If we eat red meat, it shouldn't be more than twice a week, ideally, and then leaning also on your white meats, your chicken, your pork. The one thing that I would say to moms, limit how much you rely on these, is limit how much caffeine you use overall, because it's a short-acting stimulant and it's not necessarily that helpful for you. And I would also say, as much as it's delicious and it helps you get through the moment, make sure that there is something to balance out the sweet stuff. If you are having rusks, if you are having cool drinks or things like that, like, balance it out if you can. Sometimes we do need a little something to say, well done for making it through what was a tough day, especially if your baby has colic or anything like that. But make sure that it's balanced, because those are short-term fixes and overall they won't necessarily help you feel good. Obviously, as well, if there are foods that you know my digestion's not going to be comfortable, avoid foods that are going to bloat you. Avoid foods that are overly rich and going to make you feel tired or uncomfortable. And so there as well, it's knowing your body, knowing what generally works for you. And I don't know that all of us are necessarily connected to how we're feeling in that immediate postpartum space, but trust the patterns that worked before, because they are likely to still work to some extent postpartum.
Yeah, that is true. Thank you. Okay, so now there's so much we're trying to juggle, but on top of that, we might be breastfeeding. Hopefully, most of us are breastfeeding. Most of our mums, they want to breastfeed, they want to go through this. So are there foods that you should or shouldn't have during pregnancy? I mean, during breastfeeding, not pregnancy. Well, that we've covered, but during breastfeeding, because there are so many myths about that, right? Don't have too much of gassy food, and because your baby's going to have colic, and don't have too much of fish, and don't have too much of...
This is an excellent question. And when parents are distressed because they think their child is uncomfortable, and remember, your baby was born with an immature digestive system. Okay. There is a certain amount of grunting between 4 a.m. and 6 a.m. that is pretty normal, even though you're going to think this is distressing. Yes. Why is my baby grunting like this? Yes. So your child is born with an immature digestive system. But that said, you as the parent will know that this is excessive. This doesn't look right. So when it comes to gassy food, the gas that is in my digestive system does not go into my breast milk and into my child's body. And so a lot of the stuff, my daughter said the most unbelievable thing to me the other day. She said, I remember tasting spicy food when I was in your tummy. And I'm like,
really?
You can eat spicy food, and the flavors, in theory, your child will be exposed to them, and the flavors when you are breastfeeding that you consume will change the flavor of your breast milk.
Right.
So it is possible that there are certain things that your child might not love, but you aren't necessarily going to have egg and things kind of moving straight into your breast milk.
Okay, yes.
Now, We do know that up to 10% of breastfed babies and formula-fed babies may experience a cow's milk protein allergy. And a lot of moms will say, take this out of your diet and that out of your diet and that out of your diet, and recommend these incredibly unkind, strict, just elimination of foods. And I do not recommend this unless it has been suggested by your pediatrician, your nurse, whoever is your counsel, mm-hmm. Your trusted advisors. If you have a family history of atopy, of allergies, yes. then you are more likely to have a baby with allergies as well. Okay. But if no one in your family has allergies, you don't have allergies, your partner doesn't have allergies, chances are that this might be a little bit of an a immature digestive system that you are seeing, and you don't necessarily need to cut a whole lot of things out. That said, it is still possible, because allergies are on the rise, that there is an allergy to something and you want to get it properly tested.
Okay.
Even cow's milk. My daughter had a cow's milk protein allergy. So the milk there, tiny, tiny, tiny amounts of cow's milk went into my breast milk and into her digestive system, which gave her a very upset digestive system. Only 0.5% of exclusively breastfed kids have this, but I had it as a child. And so it was her genes. It wasn't yes. what she ate. It wasn't what I ate during pregnancy. We don't believe that there is strong evidence that what you eat during pregnancy influences what your child experiences as an allergy later. There is this really important window of tolerance, mm-hmm. and this is not for today's discussion.
Yes.
But we know that in between the age of 4 months and 6 months, which goes against the World Health Organization's recommendation to exclusively breastfeed until 6 months,
mm-hmm.
And this is why you must always talk to a health professional about your family and your individual child.
Yes.
Don't take general advice for your family. But there is this window where we see children introduced to these solids have better oral tolerance, not before, because that increases the risk of allergies. It's in between 4 to 6 months, and 6 months is still fine.
Okay.
But this is something that you would discuss. So that is the point at which you would actually improve allergies or tolerance of certain foods. Families with a very strong history of allergies mm-hmm. should talk to the pediatrician or their healthcare provider
yep.
from the beginning, just to say, what do you recommend? Because the nutrition science in this area is changing all the time. All the time.
Hmm.
As we learn, yes. we change.
Yeah. And that's important. That's great as well, because the world is changing. Our diets are changing. Things that are in our food are changing. How our food is produced is changing. So there's so much that is affecting our guts in so many ways. So that's a relief to know. That's great. That really is. But is there anything that moms should eat or not eat, for example, to produce more breast milk? Does that affect what, you know, how much milk you produce, for example?
The main thing that influences how much milk you produce is how much your baby suckles and how much your baby suckles in the first week.
Okay.
The main thing that decreases breast milk production is the introduction of other sources of nutrition. So we do know that oats, for example, or certain foods can increase breast milk production,
mm-hmm.
but the most powerful thing is not what you're eating. Make sure that you are getting in enough fluid, enough nutrients, and that your baby is suckling.
Nutrients? Fluid, suckling, three important things.
Mm.
Okay, so let's move to sleep then, because that too is affecting
so much,
right? And some moms are struggling to fall asleep. Like we're saying, it's hard. Mm. You have a baby, your hormones are fluctuating. That affects your sleep. Your cortisol, like you spoke about as well. So, you know, can poor sleep, how is that affecting your appetite and what you eat and the choices that you're making?
Sleep is something that I investigate in my non-pregnant or postpartum patients because of the significant role that it plays. Sleep impacts your blood pressure, your blood sugar, your weight, your mental health. It impacts everything. And I laugh when I see these memes saying sleep when the baby sleeps. And then it's like sleep while walking through the park. Sleep in the car. Sleep is really, really important. And it is one of those things that we know temporarily is likely to be impacted in new parenthood. And if it is possible for parents to prioritize getting sleep, they really should. Like, it's okay if your house is a bit messy. It is okay if the laundry isn't folded perfectly. Get the sleep. Get the sleep because it helps you recover too. Cortisol goes up when we don't get adequate sleep, and it can make us snackier, hungrier. And so often these very tired parents are grabbing ready-made foods or convenience foods because they're hunting for the energy that they didn't get from their sleep. And so we do see that parents who are not sleeping well tend to gain weight if they're not even keeping their weight stable. Sleep is vital.
That's crazy. Who would have thought? Less, you know, how bad can it be, you know, that it can actually make you lose weight? And I think it's one of those factors that many people overlook, right?
Absolutely. And interestingly, when people are under pressure, so maybe under significant mental stress or working out very hard and not recovering enough, we sometimes see that people lose mostly muscle. They lose lean tissue when they're losing weight, rather than adipose or fat tissue. So being incredibly sleep deprived is a stressed state. And even if you are losing weight, your body might not be letting go of fat. It is letting go of muscle. And that is the opposite of what we want.
So if we want to have a good night's rest, yes, we know that there are many factors that may be affecting us. But from a nutrition perspective, I mean, we've heard about magnesium helping. So are there any magnesium-rich foods that we could incorporate, or calming, you know, teas or things like that? Do they really help? Do they really help?
Magnesium will help if you are magnesium deprived.
Okay.
Or deficient, rather, not deprived, I should say. So magnesium is one of these foods that you cannot eat just one food and you get all magnesium for the day. You have to get it from multiple sources. And sources are like dark green leafy veggies, whole grains, dairy, nuts and seeds. And as I say, you have to like eat quite a lot of those to get them. Now, people who stress, who sweat a lot, or who drink a lot, hopefully new parents are not drinking a lot, tend to charge through their magnesium a lot faster than people who aren't those things. And so I think that magnesium can be incredibly supportive in the postpartum space. How do I know if I'm magnesium deficient? Some of the indicators are you might have difficulty falling asleep, so insomnia. You might be a little bit constipated, and you might be getting cramps, specifically in your toes and in your calves. And I know when I was pregnant, I got a lot of those cramps. So I would sometimes have an Epsom salt bath, one whole cup of Epsom salts into a bath and relax in there for at least 15 to 20 minutes. But you can also supplement with magnesium. And magnesium takes time to be absorbed. So you can take it before you go to bed. It helps to improve the absorption overnight. But don't take it for 1 or 2 days. Take it for at least a month to see a change. Magnesium can really help people fall asleep, but if you're taking like a magnesium oxide, it can actually give you a bit of a runny tummy. So the form that you take is important, and you can discuss that with your pharmacist.
Okay, wonderful. Now we finally get to exercise to support all of this, right? Does it help? How does mom fit it in? I mean, is it going to help us make better food choices? Is it going to help us sleep better? Will it help us snap back to where we want to be quicker? You know, and how much emphasis do you think we should put on this when baby's born?
I'm a dietitian, and so people think my focus will always be on food, but I think exercise is incredibly important, not in the you have to every single day for this many minutes, but rather exercise helps connect our brains to our bodies. It helps us really feel that relationship so that you're able to tell the difference between I'm thirsty, I'm hungry, I'm tired, frustrated, and so that you can respond appropriately to the signals from within your body. And postpartum, I am not expecting anyone to be exercising like a maniac. Your body is still stretchy. Mm-hmm. You haven't, like, those ligaments haven't gotten tighter. And so gentle exercise is important. And you want to make sure that you've got clearance from your healthcare provider before you go Absolutely. Dancing around the place, especially if you've had any stitches, that type of thing. You want to make sure you've given yourself adequate time to heal properly. If you push yourself too early, it is possible to pop stitches, and that is a very unpleasant complication. And so listen to what your healthcare providers say when it comes to restarting. Yes. I personally think that putting your baby against your body and going for a walk in the sunshine is good for both of you. And I have memories of, like, letting my slightly older child touch bark and look at, and it's actually like a really lovely time. Yes. So when we think of exercise, I don't want moms to think like, now I have to go to a gym and I have to go away. Think about the things that you can do at home. Mm-hmm. You might be able to do some walking in front of YouTube. You might be able to go for a walk outside with your baby. It could also be an opportunity to spend quality time with an older sibling, if there's yep. one in the house, that you can actually say, hey, can I push you in the pram, or can we go for a walk, or something like that, because older siblings need attention too.
They do.
But to make it gentle, the recommendations are that we exercise for at least 150 minutes a week. And so if moms can start exercising, particularly in the form of a walk, I think that's excellent.
I couldn't agree more. It's about those simple things and how you incorporate it into your daily life, because, like you're saying, always seek advice from your healthcare professional to know where you're at, because everybody is so unique. So, Natalie, we've covered so much today, and I think we could go deeper into all of these topics. But for mums that have had their baby, apart from everything else that you've told them already, there's a lot to consider. What are some of your top tips that would give them to focus on in bite-sized pieces as they get through this part of their journey?
I would just say, hang in there. It gets easier, first and foremost. And secondly, I would say, don't overthink it. Think about the basics. Mm-hmm. Make sure you have something that looks kind of balanced. Is there some protein? Do you have some better choice carbs? Can someone chop some veggies for you? Can the supermarket veggies for you? Can you buy a rotisserie chicken? Yes. And just aim for small regular meals. It doesn't have to be perfect. I love the term satisfice. Like, it doesn't have to be 100%. You can get close enough, and consistency is important. So rather than going, I'm going to start on Monday, I'm going to be perfect, blah, 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 blah. No, mom, dad, be gentle with yourself and just aim for consistently getting the things in. And in time, you will see the progress that you're hoping for.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. I so appreciate your perspective. As a dietitian, I think it's such a holistic perspective. And that is wonderful for our moms to understand that when you're going to seek advice from a dietitian, you know, she's just not going to talk about all the things that need to be on your plate. You're looking at our lives holistically, because there's so many things that affect your diet, like we've just spoken to. So that's wonderful to know, an absolute great source. And moms need to know that, I think, you can reach out to people like yourselves that are here to help you on your journey. So thank you so much for being with us today. We will share your details as well. Thank you. You can mention it right now. You are on social media.
I'm on Instagram as Informed Appetite, and you can check out my website, nataliematt.co.za. It has a WhatsApp button. Maybe I shouldn't have said that.
Wonderful. That's a dietitian on call. Thank you so much, Natalie. Wonderful.
Thank you.
And that's a wrap for this episode of Lights, Camera, Baby, brought to you by Mama Magic. A huge thank you to our guest, Natalie Matt, for sharing her wisdom, practical tips, and mom-to-mom encouragement. From balancing hormones and nourishing your body and finding joy in the journey, Natalie has reminded us that postpartum recovery is about more than bouncing back. It's about healing, thriving, and embracing the unique path you're on. We hope you're leaving this episode feeling empowered and supported. And if you enjoyed this conversation, please make sure to subscribe and share it with fellow mums who could use a dose of inspiration. Don't forget to follow us on social media and join the discussion using the hashtag #LightsCameraBaby. Until next time, remember, healing takes time. Self-compassion is key, and your journey is worth every ounce of self-care and kindness. Take care, and we'll see you next week for another empowering episode of Lights, Camera, Baby, brought to you by Mama Magic.